Hello and welcome back to the Generation for Change, a podcast brought to you by the committee members of the G4C Southwest, part of Constructing Excellence Organisation. My name is Niall Wellington and I'll be your host today as I talk to Andrew Foster, Senior Partner at Robotham Architects. Welcome, Andrew.
Hi, Niall. How are you?
I'm not too bad, thank you very much.
Good.
So our focus at G4C is to encourage young people into the construction industry. So I think it would probably be a good place for us to start if you could sort of explain how you got into architecture.
So I guess I liked drawing when I was younger. I like drawing now as well, actually, but I really loved drawing when I was younger. And I looked for a career where I could do a lot of drawing, quite like making things, models and stuff as well. And it seemed like a good fit. I wasn't super arty, if I'm honest. I wasn't so good at painting a picture, but I was quite happy to sit and doodle and draw. So that was the main reason I got into it, which I don't know whether that's a good enough reason, but it was the reason I did it.
What was your first experiences then in terms of education and sort of work-wise?
I did a little bit of work experience when I was at school in a funny little architect's practice near to where I lived with two old chaps who taught me a few things, and that helped me make my mind up. And I went to university in Cardiff, where I was at the Welsh School of Architecture, and was there for a very happy 4 years in Cardiff and a few years then out in placement. So that's the route I took after A-levels.
And I think because we've sort of gone through the educational system, as it were, one way or another, I think for people who are looking to get into construction, but also that are already in construction, we can kind of give our past experiences and knowledge about what we've experienced. Is there anything that you've done during your career that you would maybe change, or you think if I had my time again, you know, I'd maybe do this a little bit differently?
Yeah, and I think it's hard to kind of go and kind of do things differently again. If I had a regret, it would be the fact that I didn't take out a bit of time whilst I was busy trying to climb up the ladder of my career to actually take stock a bit and maybe do a bit of traveling. I went straight from school to university. I went straight from university to a job. I've been in almost the same job for the last 35 years. You know, I really to think about exactly what I wanted. I think I got what I wanted in the end, but I think I probably, looking back on it, I didn't really give myself any breathing space. So I think if I had the financial ability to have some time off, which I don't now, but I wish I had done it when I was, my outgoings were cheaper. I wish I'd done a bit more traveling and had a bit more time out perhaps before I got stuck into full-time work.
And it is a difficult question, because obviously you wouldn't be where you are now maybe if you hadn't have gone down the path you went down. And that might be good. It might be a good thing or a bad thing. I don't know. But
yeah, and I, if there was probably one other thing. So I've worked in Robothams now for 30 years, and I haven't worked anywhere else. If I had a sort of side regret, it might be that I haven't really experienced working in different sorts of practices. And I think there is definitely some benefit to gain from different styles of working. But they, as you say, I mean, I might not have had the opportunities if I hadn't shown the loyalty to my employer here. So, and managed to do things the way they wanted it. But yeah, I think you could move around a bit more and perhaps get a bit more experience, perhaps.
Yeah, but I think that's maybe credit to yourself and to Robothams, really, as a organisation, that, you know, you have been there for so long and you've, you know, been so loyal and done good service, obviously. When you first came into architecture then, did you have any sort of aspirations that you had set out, or were you just kind of just going through the motions and just seeing where you ended up?
I think I wanted to have a bit of control over what I do every day and decide potentially what sorts of projects to work on. Although it's a bit of an illusion because I don't get that much choice in terms of what I work on. I need to work on what we win and what I go out and try to find and what comes through the door. But I think I aspired to have a bit of control. And I also think probably I ended up in a practice that suited me because I fancied being at some point, you know, a partner. So, and I think if I'd gone into a very, very big company, I probably would have got a bit lost. But working here, I've been able to be involved in lots of projects and lots of relatively, from a fairly early stage, I was able to do some quite responsible jobs. Whereas I guess if I'd been working on a £200 million new hospital, they probably wouldn't have let me be in charge when I was 22. Whereas there were jobs when I started here where you know, the value of them might have been, I don't know, 200 or 300,000 pound extensions or something, and they let me pretty much run it. And I only went to my bosses when something had gone wrong and I needed some help. But that did give me the ability to be independent, and it meant that I could, I mean, I felt like I grew quite quickly because it, I was, I wasn't, I wouldn't say I was dropped in at the deep end, but there was definitely times when what I was trying to do was beyond my.
You were given your independence, yeah.
Yeah, that it was, and you don't learn unless that happens, in my opinion. You need to be pushed over the edge a bit sometimes.
So, what does a typical working week look like for you? Because within construction, I would say, as an office-based job, architect is probably the most well-known role if of anybody I speak to about construction. So it's just be interesting to know, sort of, from your perspective, what a typical week would look like for you.
You're asking me what I do. That's what you're asking me.
Basically,
What do you do, Andrew?
yeah.
Okay, so I had answered this question to a group of students about 5 years ago, Coventry University, where we provide mentoring and support, and they all looked so worried after I'd answered this question that I definitely put something. You've got to remember that I kind of a lot a fair chunk of my job now is management and not architecture, but a fair amount of my week is spent kind of making sure that we're hitting deadlines and providing support to people in all kinds of forms, whether it's sitting down with people and answering questions, whether it's reviewing drawings before they're issued. That's a fairly big chunk. If I'm honest, there's also a chunk that is staying on top of my emails and kind of trying to just keep across all the projects we're working on. Because at any one time, there's probably, I've got at least 20 to 30 live projects currently at varying scales and at varying stages. So it's kind of trying to understand where they're all at, and I'll be the only person working on. Some of them will be being worked on by two or three others. So it's kind of trying to remain across everything. I do spend some time in meetings, and it's a bit different now because we're doing that a lot more remotely. We do actually go out to site quite a lot because I don't, and we haven't ever stopped going out to site. One of the big things during the lockdown for us was that, even though we did, you know, we followed all the government guidance, we knew we had to go to site, and that is, for me, really, I'm probably out on site twice a week on different sites that we're running.
Well, it's critical for, you know, us as a contractor to be obviously working closely with yourself on the design and making sure that you're happy, and also, you know, little things that we're doing here and there you're comfortable with. So, you know.
Our teams in Zoom are brilliant. But and we've done some projects, you know, recent projects where we haven't met the client for six 9 months. But in my mind, a face-to-face meeting, if it's outside and socially distanced, is still worth more than that, really. I think it's a positive thing. And you can't inspect a site or go around or understand a difficult three-dimensional problem without seeing it on site.
Agreed, yeah, definitely.
Being out on site is part of the job as well. And I have actually got to do some drawing this week as well, which sadly isn't as much as I'd like to, but I'll probably spend at least half a day drawing this week, whether it's probably more likely to be freehand sketches than working drawings, but it still is one of my favorite bits of the job, really.
Well, like you said, you got into architecture because you like drawing, you like designing. And I guess probably for you, you know, being involved right from a blank piece of paper to then handing a project over and seeing what essentially you've created must give you, like, you know, some good satisfaction.
It does. It is satisfying. I mean, that frequently the journey is quite. So some jobs don't always pan out the way you want. Inevitably, especially when somebody else is paying the bills, and we need to remind ourselves the fact it's not our money, it's the client's money, is that the important thing we remind ourselves is that we're designing to meet a brief, and therefore sometimes there'll be something you aspire to have in the design that you don't get. So there is a degree of compromise that occurs. But yes, it's nice. And actually, the best bit is when you see a happy client, you know, when they're bouncing around their new building saying how much they like it, and you think, yeah, no, we've done okay here. And actually, you know, architectural awards and all of that stuff, we quite like those. But in practice, happy clients are what we really want, because then not only does that rewarding, but it also is more likely to lead to more business, if I'm honest. So that's probably the best thing, is going around a building where the client's really happy. They seem to have got what they wanted. We're proud of what we've done. Yes, and it can be you know, it's one of the definitely the high points of the job.
Yeah, I agree, because, you know, I find now when you hand the project over and, you know, like you say, you see the client's happy and you've gone through all the all the struggles and the challenges that you have on a daily basis, but to see the client happy is the main goal. And like you said, repeat business and forming those relationships going forward is obviously really, really important. Touching on projects and past projects that you've worked on, is there any projects or a project specifically that you'd say is your most memorable?
So I have worked on some fantastic school projects recently. The project which was the big turning point to me in schools design was one we did in Coventry called Sydney Stringer Academy, where it was an academy being delivered by the contractor Kier. And because of the relationship we had with Kier, they brought us on board in their team to work with another architect called Sheppard Robson Architects, who are based in London. And the experience of working with the other architects, which we were a bit worried about because we were worried we were going to be kind of felt to feel inferior, we actually loved it. Well, I loved it. Myself and a colleague of mine, Steve Jackson, both worked on that project, and we got so much out of it. It was that, I mentioned earlier that I never worked anywhere else, so I haven't spent it, but it was about as close to working somewhere else as you could get, because we had to work the way they worked, and we got so much out of it. We were super proud of the building. The building won an RIBA design award, and I think that experience fed into then the next sort of 10 years of school and education projects that we've worked on. Their approach to it has fed into to my approach. So it wasn't a very big job. It was about £2.5 million worth of construction value, but it was a game changer in terms of my approach to the way I dealt with contractors, clients, engagement, school projects. It was a really important one. So yeah, that project, and that was a hard project to deliver, but the end result we were really pleased with.
I think that kind of says everything there about construction. It's something that you're maybe reluctant to do, but in fact, you've really enjoyed it. And I think, we probably experience that on a day-to-day basis when you're looking at a project or you're looking at working with a contractor or a designer, and you think, we don't really know them, we don't know what they're about. But actually, one of the key parts of construction is teamwork and working with people, and you've all got the same goal, and you're all obviously trying to achieve the same thing. So no, that's brilliant to hear. What this is again probably a difficult question, but what are you hoping the future of construction will bring?
At the top of the list is climate, environmental performance. I think there's still a degree of wastage in what we do. At Cardiff, where I went to university, we had an environmental design research team, and then this was in the 1990s, and they were going on about all the things now that we're regarding as normal. And I think it has taken that quite a long time for us to catch up with where we should have been and to be talking about. And it comes from dealing with education for clients as well, spending more money on the capital cost to reduce their running costs. It's a really easy, that economic, but it's also the moral imperative of trying to react to the climate emergency, really. And for me, I hope hopefully the next 10 years are going to be all about that in my career. We're seeing that we've seen that for the last few years, and I think that's the direction of travel for the industry. And I think it's going to enable us to be to do something we're probably even prouder of.
And do you think the delay in things moving forward is maybe a generational thing? So you've got an older generation that are bringing the younger generation on who have obviously their own experiences and they're comfortable in how they deliver projects and the kind of systems that they're using. And that kind of just very, very slowly the new expectation levels or the new ideas, get pushed up the line, but it's maybe not as quick as it should be.
There's definitely we've always done it this way. We're going to keep doing it this way, and I think we're all potentially capable of being like that, to be honest. I actually don't think it's a generational thing. I think clearly there's a lot of pressure from young people to address the climate emergency, but I think that older people, especially those with families, kind of get it. They kind of get the fact that they can't leave things worse than they found it, and we're significantly in danger of doing that unless we pull our fingers out. My father-in-law has been telling me for the last 30 years I should put solar panels on my roof, so I don't. And he's now in his 70s and 80s, and so I don't think it's necessarily generational. It's easy to think the same thing you thought the day before, and it's hard to embrace new things without feeling threatened at times. Change is threatening, but actually out of change comes all the opportunities that if we're clever and entrepreneurial, we'll make money out of.
And also, again, you have to be willing to constantly develop and learn obviously in this industry, because you know that no 2 days are really the same. I know it's a cliche, but I come to work every day and I learn something every day without fail, and I get enjoyment out of that. And I think trying to sort of relay that to the younger generation and people that are considering construction, that you're not going to be bored. If you come and work in construction, you're not going to be bored.
Absolutely, for sure. I mean, that's, I think probably I've got a relatively short attention span, if I'm admitting one of my, and I think the career, it wouldn't have held me as long as it has done if I'm not ending up doing something different every day. I mean, I've worked on some really interesting projects, including an SEN school we're currently building for the Jewish community in London. And that has brought with it a whole heap of new things I've had to learn about. And I think if the job was just involved in churning out the same building you did before, regardless of how pretty it was, I think that would be a serious loss to me as a career. It would definitely lose something for me.
Just touching on sort of positive changes in the industry then, since you began your career, have you seen a positive change in the industry?
Yes, I think so. I think there is, for example, more diversity in the industry. I think there are more roots into certainly the architectural profession than there were when I joined the practice. We had architects, we had technologists. Architects had all been to university for 7 years, or been training for 7 years. Technologists have been done a more vocational route, but there's a lot more routes into the business now in terms of modern apprenticeships, and I think that has created some opportunities, because for a lot of people, you know, being at university for 4 or 5 years is just too expensive. You know, it's just too much. So I think that's definitely changed. I think the other thing that's changed for me is when I started with the practice, we used to do visualizations, which we had one chap in the office who used to do them, and it was like a dark art producing them. You know, the computer visualizations, and they were good looking visualizations, but it was a specialist job only one person could do. Whereas now, with some of the software we use, including Revit, where you know the sort of three-dimensional stuff is a consequence of building it in three dimensions. So I think one of the real improvements has been that, you know, almost every member of staff here can produce a three-dimensional view of a building or a detail, and that in terms of communication, you know, in terms of walk rounds and fly rounds of our buildings, just it's out of this world. You know, the opportunity to show a client what they're going to get before they get it is got to be a really positive outcome. Whereas before, they had to trust us. We had to say things like, you have to trust, it's going to be great, just trust us. We don't have to say that very much these days. We can actually show them, you know, in relatively, you know, photorealism, what it'll look like. And it's not a specialist job anymore. It's something that almost any architect or technician or technologist or assistant in our office can do. Even I can do it. So I think that has definitely been an improvement in architecture. Right? For me, it's kind of allowed it to become more democratic and less kind of, you know, I'm the architect, you should just do what I'm telling you should do. I think that's gone. You know, the client's got every right to show me what you mean. You know, that's not good enough for you to just tell me to trust you.
It's funny you say that, because one of my previous jobs, I worked with a guy that had been in the industry a long time, and he was showing me hand drawings, and I just could not get my head around them. I couldn't read them. You know, I'm used to, you know, CAD drawings. I'm used to three-dimensional drawings, and I know exactly what they mean. But he was showing me these drawings, and I thought, first of all, how long did that take to produce? But also, I just couldn't make head and tail of it. And I think I'm sat here now, and we're sat here, and I think in 30 years' time, I'll get a drawing out that from 2022 and show it to a 20-year-old, and they'll go, well, that's not very good, is it? But at the time, it, you know, obviously it is what it is. But yeah, no, that's good to hear. The construction industry is booming at the minute. Obviously, we've had COVID, but it's managed to sort of, if anything, soar during the pandemic. We're looking at, obviously, you know, bringing young people into construction. So how do you think that as G4C and as people who are already in construction, how we can sort of encourage them to consider the industry?
I think creating that variety of routes in is really important. I think that affordability in terms of training and that sort of thing is going to be under the spotlight. I think it's become increasingly under the spotlight. I think getting a roots into the business profession, including things like apprenticeships. I think that's critical. I think giving people variety of experience early on and giving them responsibility, I think, as well. And that takes faith on both the employer and the employee's side. But I think those are the ways you draw people in. I mean, we're a lot more visible as a business now than we used to be. I mean, before we had a website, I guess you would have had to look in a telephone book for us. Now our work is out there for everyone to see. And if you want to decide if you want to work for us, then you'd spend a bit of time looking at our website and deciding if that's the kind of work you want to do. We've always had strong relationships with local schools, local universities, giving people opportunity to spend time here. And that's always been seemingly productive. I mean, I think we probably, most of the people who've done work experience here have ended up in the profession. You know, I did. I came here for work experience after my first year at university and didn't go anywhere else. And I think that remains practical placement experience. That's been very hard to do during the pandemic, because in practice you don't really learn, you're not going to really effectively learn across a placement provided remotely. I think you're going to do that by going to someone's office and absorbing what's going on in the background. But I mean, we're offering some work placement opportunities this summer for the first time in 2 years, so I'm quite excited about that. But I mean, we've also done mentoring at universities, and we, you know, I think reaching out as a business, I think, to draw to make sure young people understand what the job involves, and that's probably good and bad. It'd be nice to put a few people off as well. You know, you don't want somebody coming into the profession expecting something they're not going to get out of it. So it, you know, that's providing information, I think, is the most important thing, and finding clarity, you know, in terms of what we do.
That's great. And that ties in quite nicely with, as G4C Southwest, what we're looking to do in the near future. And that is going into colleges, schools, speaking to young people, but also trying to work with local companies so that we can offer day released work experience, so that, you know, they can maybe spend a couple of days on site, see if, you know, that takes their interest, or, you know, come and sit in the office with me and go on site visits, or even with somebody like yourself, and try and give them a broader knowledge of the different roles in the industry, because we're very much of the understanding that at the minute construction is kind of, you know, a bricklayer, a carpenter, or an architect, and there's no kind of in between, which obviously we know there's a million and one roles in between that.
I mean, I suspect if you looked at teaching, for example, you imagine somebody standing in front of a room teaching, and yet if you go to a school, you realize that there's probably 20 or 30 different job roles in that building. So I think it is about clarifying, you know, it is about presenting people with that variety of roles that suits everyone's personality. I mean, in our practice, we have, you know, some people who are brilliant technically, some people who are better at design, some people are great at visualization, some people are great organizationally and are great, you know, managers of information. So I think that, you know, even in a single professional kind of route, there's this big variety. And if somebody came here, we would try to make sure they saw all parts of that job.
What would be your best piece of advice that you could give somebody looking to get into architecture?
I think drawing lots, even though we use computers a lot, most of our output is computerized by the time it comes out, whether it's in Revit as a three-dimensional file, a model effectively, or whether it's a visualization, or whether it's a two-dimensional CAD drawing. I think that drawing is it by hand, regardless of how good you think you are, because I think people underestimate, you know, if you look back on the Victorian period, that, you know, if you had the time and you went down a mine, then, you know, drawing is something that lots of people did. And I think that drawing is one of those things that actually, you know, it's all about communication. And I think that, you know, there's still opportunity in a meeting to get your pen out and draw something for somebody. And as an architect, I think that creates a bit of a magic about it. You know, talking back about the experience of working with another architect, the London architect, you know, their lead director, would draw regularly in meetings. His drawings are amazing. And you thought, I know, I want to do that. That's how and actually clients really love it. And so I think drawing is, you know, I've still got all my sketchbooks from when I was learning, when I was both at school and when I was training. And, you know, if I have a few minutes to myself, which is increasingly difficult as a partner and also as a father, when I have some time free, you know, nothing settles me down and gives me a bit of mindfulness than getting a pen out and drawing something, you know, random. Often it's completely random, but you know, it's I think drawing lots, I think is and I think it also helps you analyze the world that's around you. It doesn't have to be a kind of, it doesn't even have to be a three-dimensional drawing. You know, people struggle a bit, but with perspective, and it's hard. So don't draw in three dimensions, draw in two dimensions, but it actually helps you understand what you're looking at. If you draw it, you've understood the proportions of it. You've understood how it goes together, what the different materials are. So I think for me, drawing is the nub of the, I think, and that might be because I'm obsessed with it, but I do think it goes to the root of how you communicate with other people. And that is what architecture is all about. It's how you communicate with clients and contractors and everyone else in the team. You know, how do you go about that? It says a lot about you and your designs.
Well, yeah, you are creators, aren't you? So I guess you sketch and you doing that is empty in your mind of
yeah. And but it's often you draw something and somebody who knows more about it than you will go, that's not going to work. Okay, but you've got to that point a lot quicker than you going back to the office, producing a CAD file of it, issuing it to the, you know, because you're often in a room with people who know more about it than you. You know, a lot of contracts, a lot of subcontractors do know how to build things really well. And actually, if you're open to them and say, if I draw this, and they go, no, that's not going to, because of this and that, you've learned something by drawing it and by talking to them.
Yeah, and we live in a world of emails and you know, and Zoom calls and whatever, but like you say, there's still a lot of drawing on site, and I'm not very good at drawing, but you know, we'll all sit around a design team meeting and I'll get my pad out and I'll say, look, what do you think about this or that? And I think that's still a really, really important part of what we do. Thanks for your time, Andrew. The only final question that I have for you is, if you could describe construction in three words, what would they be?
Okay, I'm going to give you a semi-straight answer to that question, and I'm going to have three words, and I'm going to have one extra word. And the three words are, I think, rewarding. We talked about that before. It is rewarding. It might not necessarily, it isn't rewarding. It isn't always rewarding on a daily basis, but it is rewarding over the year. I think it's challenging. I think you can't just assume that you're going to get what you want. You're going to have to fight a little bit for it and persuade people. And sometimes you have to accept the fact you're wrong and you're going to have to do it a different way. And then I think teamwork is probably that we don't really create buildings on our own, you know, and actually that's probably is a complete, but I'm also going to add one word, which is frustrating, because at times it can be intensely frustrating. But I think that, I don't think that's unusual in terms of the world of work. I think at times we're all frustrated occasionally. Sometimes you need to go away and you need to bounce back. I think that's the, sorry, I haven't really answered your question straightly, but I've added an extra word there, which is frustration, and keep bouncing back.
I'll be honest, I wasn't expecting a three-word answer from you anyway, so that's fine. I really appreciate that, Andrew. Thank you very much for coming on.
No problem, Noel.